I got to mark a place before I lose a place. In the book of Isaiah, the 51st chapter is where I wrote down we start, so I'll assume that's, I got one right? In and of itself, I personally think Isaiah is maybe the heaviest one of all of the Old Testament. There's just so much in there. I mean, Daniel is cool, and Daniel does have the prophecies, and Daniel does talk about the giant statue with, you know, the golden head and the silver chest and the bronze and the clay feet and steel legs. But still, Daniel just goes on and on and on about so many different, Isaiah goes on and on about so many different things. And he sort of, Buck Owens and Roy Clark, if you've watched that comedy, I mean that show, Hee Haw, second best show ever made, after the Beverly Hillbillies, and one step before Andy of Griffith. Yep. But they used to do a thing called, that's good, no, that's bad. Then you say, that's bad, oh, that's good. Well, it seems to me like Isaiah gives us a lot of that's good, that's bad, that's good, that's bad. Because he will continually warn Israel of the anger that God has when they do not continue to worship and follow him, and when, secondly, they worship and follow the false gods. Then he will go back on the opposite side, but if you do straighten out, if you do come back to God, if you do get rid of false idols, then good things will come upon you. And that's the good part. And this has been going on for over 50 chapters. And it will go on to the end of the book. Now, we do get at the latter part of the book, as we had three or four other times, the annunciation, the prophecy of the coming of Jesus, which, of course, is the really good of all goods. But yet, there are some warnings. I'm going to try to do this the best I can, because I'm a political person outside this building. To be honest with you, I love politics. The worse they mess up abortion, the more it's better than television. I just love it. It's the cloak and dagger and the whodunits don't have nothing compared to those guys up and girls up in D.C. But sometimes we just lose our mind. And the people we thought were going in the right direction aren't. Well, that's the way it can be in church, and that's the way it's really easy to get ourselves fooled by listening to the wrong things over and over enough till we start thinking it must be the right thing. That's why there are so many dozens and dozens and dozens of churches listed in the Yellow Pages or on the Internet. And if you ever want to count yourself to sleep, look up on the Internet and just write in churches in my area, and you'll see dozens of different ones. The Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints. I still haven't figured what that is. I know what it means, but I can't figure out what it is. I don't know what latter days means. And we go on and on and on. All right, here we go. Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness. So we have studied both Sunday mornings and on Wednesdays. The goal is righteousness, doing the right thing for the right reason. And it basically means being a servant of Jesus and God. Well, you evidently are not born with righteousness, because it does not say to keep righteousness. It says pursuing righteousness. It's a goal that we should go after. Some of you have had a goal in life that you, whether it's at work, whether you want to have perfect attendance at school. Scott, our son, made a decision one day, I'm not going to miss school this year. I was a kindergarten. He went through it. Made it through the first grade. He graduated. Had not missed a day of school in his life. Because that was his goal. I don't think he cared about the grades. He liked the lunch and the recess, but he said, I'm not going to miss any school. So, once we get a goal, which we all need a goal, or goals, plural, then what do we do to pursue it? We have to be active. It just doesn't come to us. Okay, he says, those who pursue righteousness, and who seek the Lord. Well, there's a second part. If you pursue righteousness, you're looking to God. Because if you're not serving God and doing it God's way, then you're not going to be righteous anyway. It's part of the deal. So you pursue righteousness, you seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which you were cut. and to the quarry from which you were hewn. Now, Carolyn, if I'm not mistaken, you live up near Bedford, Indiana, don't you? If any of you all know anything about that area or anything about construction in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, there's a product they make called Bedford Stone. Well, they don't really make it. They produce it. They go out into huge areas, and they mine the stone. But instead of breaking it up like you would coal, they cut it. You ever seen it done? Now, in the old days, it was different, but nowadays, they got huge saws that they will cut it and quarry it out in anywhere from a 12-inch piece to sometimes 48-inch pieces, and it's usually like 5 or 6 inches deep and 4 to 6 inches tall. That the rock is the source. Most of you come from up north. Well, we all come from up north eventually. Brick houses. Do you ever notice the brick on a house, how it doesn't seem to be the same? Different colors, different shades of the brick. All come from the same pile. What was it called? Is it General Shale, Jeff? Okay, you knew where I was going with that one, didn't you? It was a mountain in the middle, wasn't it downtown, almost downtown Johnson City, wasn't it? It was a big mountain. When I was there, they had just started digging it. I understand it's flat now. But it had a marvelous clay, perfect for brick making. And they would squeeze out, form, and shape the clay. Then they would bake it in a big kiln. Now, this is a kiln where you put a whole rock train car in it. It's the type of size. Well, when that load comes out, some of those will be oranges, some of them will be red, some of them will be dark. And it all has to do with where they are on the stack. The higher they are, the hotter the heat, the darker they get. Those down the bottom are very soft. They're oranges and stuff. So they all came from the same source. And the old timers could look at a brick and tell you where it came from, what part of the country it was made, because of the way the clay was. Look to the rock from which you're cut. Now, I can not help but look back to Sunday's sermon on the 16th chapter of Matthew, the 16th verse and follow. When, who do you say that I am? Well, some say Simon, said that, you're John the Baptist, you're this, that, and other. He said, who do you say I am? Peter said, well, you're Jesus, the Son of God. Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father which is in heaven. Then he says, you are Peter. You are Petro, which means stone. But upon this Petras, I shall build my kingdom. It's the church. The church is the rock from which we're cut. And it wasn't Simon Peter that should be the pope, leader, apostle of the church. It should be Jesus. And we shouldn't let anything get in the way. So that's why he's talking about the rock and the quarry from which you're hewn. Look to Abraham, your father, and to Sarah, who gave you birth. Now, Sarah only had one child. She did not birth a whole nation full of people, but they are her descendants. And that is what he's talking to. We come from that descendants. And when it's available over the counter, or at least close, the Jews, Hasidic Jews, have now got a DNA. They can not only tell you if you are of Hebrew descendancy, but what tribe you're from. That DNA is that specific. And I didn't even see that on CSI. I saw that in the Jewish paper. When I called him, he was but one. I blessed him and made him many. This is talking about God, talking about Abraham. Remember him coming from Ur of Chaldees. He had no children at that time. He was blessed and he had many children and descendants. And that's where the Jewish nation comes from. So God has got a plan. The Lord will surely comfort Zion. Zion is another word for what? Jerusalem. Over and over and over. I love that old-timey song, and most of you all were from up north. You probably never sang our southern gospel songs. But we used to sing, we're marching to Zion. Beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching up. You never heard it, have you? There you go. You're from the north, aren't you? Way up north. You ever hear of Bill Gaither? There you go. Bill Gaither. Southern gospel. That's their term is Zion. He says, I will, what? Comfort Zion. Now, Israel's going to be destroyed. First the northern 10 tribes by the Nineveh and that area. The Assyrians were just brutal. And then later the southern two tribes, which Nebuchadnezzar would get hold of. So Israel, because of their sins, but they talked about the weep. They would weep and be upset about the loss of Israel, of Zion. But God said, I will comfort you. I'll bring you back. And will look for compassion on all her ruins. When the Babylonians came in, they rim-wrecked the place. They just tore it up. It is said that both they and the Roman soldiers saw so much gold plating where they would make the paper thin gold, you know, and put it, cover the walls and the boards and the cedars, that they set the place on fire. Because gold has such a different melting point that as the rocks got hard, the stones got hard, they would heat up the gold and the silver and it would run down and they could catch it that way. There was that much of it. And it, after they got through, there wasn't anything left. All the cedars of Lebanon were burnt down and everything was gone. Rocks split up and thrown away, piled up. He says, I will look compassion upon her ruins. If you've ever met anybody that served in the early Gulf War, ask them if they got near, not Baghdad, but the truth. You pop up Baghdad and Babylon, show them how far apart they are. Well, neither one of them's moved in a long time. Am I right?
Sorry, I'm not here right now.
Cubs lost again, I know. But, what was I saying? Oh, they go back and they'd say, I've talked to a couple, they went to, say, Babylon, it's just piles of rocks here, piles of rocks there. Nothing like the great hanging walls we saw last week's in the picture we had last week for us, Norm. So, I've seen the ruins. Even though it hadn't been ruined yet, I've seen the ruins, God's going to say. Her wasteland, like, I will make her deserts like Eden. What's Eden? The Garden of Eden. So where all the sand is and where all the destruction was, where there's nothing now, nothing can live, nothing survives, I'm going to make it plush and green again. I will restore what I once did. That has always been a good question to ask. What happened to the Garden of Eden? You ever think about that? You know, it says that Adam and Eve were thrown out of the Garden of Eden and God put an angel there to guard it with a bright, shiny star, a sword. Did he just pick it up and take it? Did God disassemble it? Did God make it go poof? I don't know. That's an unanswered question for us right now. After we get through asking who killed John Kennedy, we'll ask God what he did with the Garden of Eden. But John Kennedy comes first. At least in my mind. Maybe I'll change it when I get there. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the sound of singing. Isn't it amazing when we're happy we just seem to sing a lot? And when we're sad we seem to sing a lot. I guess it's the way we express our emotions, both the happiness and the sadness. I know that though I can't sing, I enjoy the worship services that we have and the singing that goes on. It gets me prepared for Sunday morning worship time. And I think God put that in us, the love of music. There was a show, America's Got Talent, I believe it was. Did y'all see the last season? They had this young man in his 20s, I assume, that was blind and extremely, extremely autistic. Did y'all see that one? But when he sat down at the piano and his mother put his hands up on the piano, he could go for it. Just tearjerker, wasn't he? And the music seemed to make everybody joyful. He won first place, matter of fact, $1 million as well. I bet she was pretty happy about the deal after that. You got it up there? Let's look at it then. Is there a map guide that shows us how many miles is a mile?
No, that's the guide there.
Well, pop out up. Concentrate on that one there. Huh? Can you blow it up? Jeopardy song played in my head. There you go. Keep going, brother. All right, now get it down where I can reach it. He tried to hit the floor. He's a smart aleck, you know. That's better. All right, from it just sort of like just like that. That's what, 3 inches? If we hold it out like that.
Here, you
want to
bring it back?
Oh, there you go.
I forgot about that one.
You know, Red Skelton died. We don't need more comedians. Raise it up just a very little bit so I get the first one. All right, right there. Hope. All right. Here, maybe a pencil height would be there. It's a short pencil. Oh, no. Right there, one pencil. And right there, one pencil. Looks like what? Between 75 and 100 miles. So Babylon is gone, just the ruins. But Baghdad, thank you, sir, is what we left of it, is still surviving. And then Israel will change from all those mountains and deserts and stuff into something that's real. Nice and just beautiful. Her wastelands will be like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her. Thanksgiving and the sound of singing. Listen to me, my people. Hear me, my nation. The law will go out for me. My justice will come to the light of the mountains. My righteousness draws near speedily. My salvation is on the way. Judgment day is coming. Now, when... This was about 750 B.C. It hadn't happened then. Christ was there at 0 B.C. Didn't happen then. We're at 2000 and, what is this, 19 B.C. Hadn't happened yet. So how can God say this coming soon? Think about it. How could God say, when you were 2 years old, maybe three. How long was it between Christmas and Christmas?
18 years.
Forever, whatever. Now, at our age, or birthday to birthday may even be a better comparison. At our age, from 1 year to another, like 15 minutes.
Yeah, the world turning faster.
World turning faster, you're right. No rhyme, but it feels that way, doesn't it? So, I have to say that God does not wear a Timex, or a Rolex, either one. That time means nothing to him. I was asked at a meeting Friday. It may have been Saturday. I think it was Friday morning. And they asked me about a certain scripture that they'd heard in their church the week before. And they said, Chaplain, said, answer this question. Said, what does it mean about waiting for God to come? It seems like a long time. What am I going to do? They were brought up in a religion that were taught. I said, I guess you were brought up in a religion that taught you that the words of purgatory. Yeah. I said, it's not in the Bible. There is no time where we go and sit and wait somewhere. The simple fact is that God, does he not say, some of you will be asleep? And they use that word sleep a lot. Well, in the sleep condition, we don't know about time. Unless you have a clock that talks to you, or you're listening to Fox News all night, and you know when the shows change. In other words, the time meant nothing. In the period of time here, when God is not in a hurry, if he was in a hurry, this world would already be gone. So what we've got to do is that there's nothing. We look at it different. We just see it different than he does. And we just need to accept that, because there's nothing we can do to change it. We can't hurry him up. Gets more and more people. Why is God waiting? I was asked. Because he wants more and more people to be saved. Give them the opportunity to hear. A patient God. Where'd you get that word? Does it say right in there, patient? What version are you using? Oh, okay. I thought you meant it was right in there and I missed it. My righteousness draws near speedily. My salvation is on the way. And it'll be here when he gets good and ready. Now, are we closer? Yeah, we're closer than we were yesterday. We're one day closer. Will we get to see it in our lifetime? Well, if we don't, we'll see it after our life, and it will only going to matter if it's going to happen when it happens. And that's the key to the entire thing. It's going to happen. And my arm will bring justice to the nations. He uses that term means strength. My strength will bring justice to the nations. The term of Christ will also use justice to the nations. Paul will use it, justice to the nations. People will know about and either be rewarded for their righteousness or punished for their evil. And that is justice. See, you know, the lady holding the scales up, they're supposed to be equal. Each of us gets our own weighed in the balance. And my arm will bring justice to the nations. The islands will look to me and wait and hope for my arm. The different places where the people are scattered will want God to pull them back together again. Because even when Babylon was destroyed them, even when Syria destroyed the northern tribes, there were still the remnants. And they all longed to go back home. Any of y'all ever been away from home in just a short period of time and said, I got to go back and see how everybody was? You've been gone to the military, you've been gone to college, you moved away for a job or something, but you still wonder about what's happening back home. Even though you might not have any desire to go back, it may not have been all that good, but you think about it, that's always going to be home. For those of you that were born in other states, which I think is pretty much everybody in here, that's always going to be home. That's where you're born in. We go from there. Lift up your eyes into the heavens and look to the earth beneath. All right. That is one of my favorite Old Testament scriptures. It comes from the book of Psalms. I use it in every funeral. Psalms 121. I lift up my eyes into the hills, for which cometh my help. My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heavens and earth. He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over you, over Israel, will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord watches over you, and the Lord is your shade at the right hand. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch you over your life. The Lord will watch you on your coming and your going, both now and foreverness. Now, the psalmist, probably David, wrote this. The psalmist, about 250 or 300 years before Isaiah, quotes the same point that God gave Isaiah there. Why should that be? Today we call it plagiarism, would we? You just copy from somebody else. With a lawsuit yesterday or day before yesterday, I have no idea who it was. Stairway to Heaven. Who did Stairway to Heaven? Zeppelin was sued by a guy that used that same line like 10 years earlier. 40 years ago. They said, you just stole our line. Well, I don't see Solomon stealing a line from, or suing Isaiah, because God inspired both of them to say, lift up your eyes to the heavens. And how beautiful it is. It doesn't work down here. We've got too many light. I guess, McKinney, are you outside of the area of the city where you can see the lights from the sea, or you far enough out that all you see is the ambient, huh? It's just dark. You don't have any stars where you are? Well, you can see the stars. To me, those are just so calming and cool, just absolutely beautiful, that we're not being intruded on by people lights. I'm working on a house on, where is that, Estero Island, Fort Myers Beach. You have to have what's called turtle lights. No lights can shine up, because the turtles see it when their babies come to the house and die, because they look to the moon to find the water. So that light's that bright, that guides them their way. The heavens will vanish like smoke. People used to think that we'll build a bomb big enough to blow the earth up, but we can't. God created it, God will have to take it out. But the heavens will vanish like smoke. The earth will wear out like a garment. Its inhabitants will die like flies. That's not very comforting. Be like a bunch of... You ever go to a house been closed up for a while, particularly one's been closed up for the wintertime, and you look over by the window where the sun is, and there'll be 500 or 1,000 flies all in one big pile dying there. Nobody's ever done that? Yeah, we did our house in the old days. My grandmother's attic. My mother's attic. One time, yeah. Just piles of them. And that's what's going to happen to the people that aren't on God's side. But my salvation, in verse 6, will last forever. Isn't that the cool part? Is the heat on in here or is it just me? It feels like the heat's blowing up here. I need to call an air conditioner man. 76. That's cold? It's normal? So I can turn it to 76 at our house now?
No, here.
Oh, okay. 73. Hear me, you who know what is right. I missed something. Who was it? What now? We're going to turn the church around next week. Right, cool off. It goes like this. Hear me, you who know what is right. You people who have my law in your hearts. Now he's talking to the Christians, those who know who God is. God implants on us goodness. We have to be the ones to decide whether to keep it or not. He says, do not fear the reproach of men or be terrified by their insults. Don Rickles, Phyllis Diller. What do they have in common? Joan Rivers, thank you very much. What do they have in common? Huh? They insulted people. That's what they did. I don't know if they did that in real life, but on their act and on their routine, that's what they did. He says, don't be afraid of people like that. People will make fun of you. Connie, when you are been up there to the anti-abortion place, have they ever been protesting while you were there? Now, I'm not talking about the baby place. I'm talking about where the abortions are. Yes, they're going to the hospital. Well, the number of abortion clinics has been cut down, thanks to people who have been working and praying for the unborn. All I heard about was what do you call it then when you kick the president out? Impeachment. That's all I heard all night. I like that better. Hear me, you know what is right. You who have my law in their hearts. Do not fear the reproach of men or be terrified by their insults. People will try to make fun of you. You don't like it, they'll make fun of you. If you ever were, some of us were picked on a lot in school. Being born short and fat was not a good thing. And particularly when your daddy had kept your head shaved off. I got picked on a lot. We shouldn't let that bother us. That's what he's saying. It's going to happen to churches. But my righteousness will last forever. My salvation goes through all generations. It is passed down. It's not inherited. It's passed down. It's handed down. You're taught. For those of you that had grandparents that were had a heritage, they enjoyed the mountain. Pretty mountain people. Now, these are you considered mountain people? You're at the foothills, Smokies? The mountain people seem to be more proud of where they came from than the city people to me. I heard more mountain stories growing up from my grandparents because they liked it and they were proud of it. That's what we're to do about Christianity, is to pass it down to the next generation. That's what he's speaking about. Awake, awake, clothe yourselves with strength, the arm, the power of the Lord. Awake as in days gone by, as in generations of old. What was not you? Was it not you who cut Rabbath into pieces, who pierced that monster through? Was it not you that dried up the sea, the waters of the deep, and who made the road into the depths of the sea? Okay, I first read that. I said, when did they cut Rahab up? Well, you look up to the Bible dictionary and the textbooks and the explanations, there are three different explanations for Rahab. First one was the harlot in the city of Jericho that took in the spies and kept them from being captured and killed by the king of Jericho. She was, remember, tie this little, sound like a string or something, where you live, and you and your family shall be saved. And she ends up being the wife of Solomon, and the mother of Jesse, who was the father of David. So there, that's, she's not the one that was cut up. Okay, she's the one that was blessed. One of the four women in the lineage of Christ is talked about. That was not Hebrew, matter of fact. The second one was a sea monster, basically. Now, they talked about, and the King James particularly used the word sea monster more than New International does, but a sea monster that was used as a thing to fear, the unknown in the seas. And the story is that God handled it for him. They didn't have to worry about it. The third one, and I think the one that he really means, was a definition of the pharaohs of Egypt. And Israel was spared from the pharaohs of Egypt. So that word is used three different times in the Old Testament. I like the first one the best. I think the third one is the one really that he's speaking about. God having control over the monsters of the sea. The ransomed of the Lord will return. They will enter Zion with singing and everlasting joy, with crown will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them. Now, we're getting some prophecy of what's going to happen when Darius comes in. Cyrus comes in, Darius takes over, and they conquer Babylon and are in the disposition to let Israel free, not be slaves anymore. Then actually Darius gave them a bucket load of money. Well, it wasn't money, it would have been gold and jewels and a passport. Anybody attacks these Hebrews will be paid back by me. So that's how they were ransomed out. God sent someone to get their freedom. It wasn't by cash, it was by war. There's a big thing going on in Lee County, right down the road. Their computer system was off all weekend. They got a, what do you call it? Somebody hacked. They got hacked into it. And they had to buy back. I won't tell you how much they paid, but they had to buy back a new password. Yeah. And they came back online this morning. They don't know how many people. If you've ever paid tax in Lee County, bought a car or anything, you may have had your ID stolen. That was announced today. But then, they just said Lee County government. Right now it's Lee County government. But several years ago, somebody hacked our computer, and they wanted like $500 or $700. I said, "Take this." I erased the whole thing, took it down to Best Buy's, erased everything that was on it, started over. I said, "I don't pay you for my stuff." The guy went back and said, "We'll do it for $50 or $100, whatever it was." I said, "We're not going to pay you for my stuff. I'm not going to ransom back what's already been mine. But Christ will ransom back Israel." And when the people came back to the city of Zion, to the city of Jerusalem, they sang, they danced, they were happy. In the movie, what was it called? The modern day movie of Israel coming back. How they sang and was happy when Israel restarted in 1948. The one that followed up after Schindler's List. What was it? The Exodus. Thank you, Chuck. Simplest answer. Them's gone. The Exodus. And people were happy. You ever been anywhere that you just wanted to sing? You're just happy with what was going on? That's what was going on there. It may be you've gone to a graduation ceremony. You finally got your grandkids out of high school. You finally got your kids out of high school. Whatever you finally did, you just want to be excited about it. Mark, you come from a singing group of people. Now, you did not live with the Indian tribe, did you? Were your dad and them still in that kind of celebration and singing mood, or when he left the tribe, he left it all?
No, my son does.
Yeah, I know your son does. He's a singer, wasn't he? Your son?
Yes, he does sing with
He sings with a drum. So that is the nature of a lot of people, is expression of joy with the drums. And it just seems, I mean, we can all sing Yankee Doodle. That's what that was in March as well. Gladness and joy will overtake it. He had just been so happy he couldn't stand it. There's a guy, it was the other day, his dog had been gone. I think somebody broke in the house. The dog has been gone for what, 7 months? And that dog, when it was brought back, and that dog was about to go through the glass, licking and licking, just going absolutely crazy about glad to be back at home. That's what Israel went through when it happened. I heard a story one time. It said, who loves you more, your dog or your wife? Have you heard that? He said, lock them both in the trunk for an hour and let them both out and see which one of them is happy to see you. I do not recommend that. I just was told that. Not about to try it. Hadn't even crossed my mind. I am he who comforts you. Who are you that you fear mortal men, the sons of men, who are but grass, that you forget the Lord your Maker? Why do you worry about what people say? That's what he's saying. You're so worried about what somebody else says that you forget the right thing. Kids, maybe starting junior high, maybe even earlier, I'm not sure, so wanting to be with the popular crowd. Do any of y'all remember some popular things when we were, I mean, several of us went to high school at the same period of time. Twisted skirts, the boys wore those shirts with the Fruit Loops on the back of them. You remember those things? Yeah. You will stay up here with me since you're the only one else here who remembers that. What? Remember Fruit Loops on the shirts, yeah? You don't know what that is, do you? Okay, across the back, the little round thing. A lot of saddle Oxfords. Remember saddle Oxfords? Black and white, yeah. What else? Penny loafers. You give five for penny loaf. I mean, there were just certain things that everybody wants to do. They want to be part of the crowd, the in crowd. Well, don't let that in crowd be so important that you forget about God. That's what he's saying here. That you do anything just to be noticed and be popular, which will just really give you misery in the long run. But a lot of people do it. I would have to say, and this is not a judgmental thing, this is a throw out. How many kids started smoking maybe in junior high because it seemed like all the cool people did it? Marlboro. You're the Marlboro man? LSMFT. Lucky strike means fine tobacco. Yeah. So we get in that habit of wanting to be seen and be noticed. And it's really maybe not all that good an idea at times to do that. It just seems the thing that's easiest to do in the way. There'll be group of three or four be picking on somebody or laughing about somebody, you'll join in just because you don't want them to be picking on you next. Yeah. Okay. God says, don't worry about it. Don't worry about those people. I laid the foundation of the earth. I stretched out the heavens. Now that you live in constant terror every day because of the wrath of the oppressor who has bent on destruction. Anybody ever visit a communist country? You didn't, Denise, on your trips in China? Yeah, China would qualify. Where the people were just afraid to say anything out loud in the public because they could be arrested for what they think or what they think you think or what somebody else told somebody, the authorities what you're thinking. You know, that he says, don't let those people, the oppressors, bother you. It's going to happen anyway. But don't let it eat you up, because they win if you do. For where is the wrath of the oppressor? The cowering prisoners will soon be set free. Now, he's not talking about jails. He's talking about people who are afraid of life, that there's something bothering them that bad. What's that term? Houseophobia? Agoraphobia. We had a neighbor. Was it our next door neighbor? That had a houseophobia. Would not leave the house. Would not stand out, go out through the door of the house for years. That's a bondage right there. And there's a lot of other things we're afraid of as well. There's a whole new group. Are you ready for this? There's a whole new group of people who are going to the psychiatrist right now for medication because of the new camera. The new cell phone has got three cameras, and there's something about people being scared of three holes. No, you laugh if you want. I'm kidding, not kidding you. It's scared of three. There's actually a term for it. They've actually made a term for it. Connie, you got three holes in that camera?
No.
Okay, you can keep it in here then.
That thing's expensive.
Oh, there's a new one. Samsung's got one now that folds up like a book. It's only $2,000. My C doesn't work, but I'm not going to spend $2,000 on a camera. The cowering prisoners will soon be set free. They will not die in their dungeon, nor will they lack bread. For I am the Lord your God who churns the sea so that the waves roar. And the mighty and the Lord mighty is his name. Now, a couple weeks ago, didn't we have a little event over in, wasn't Bermuda? Was it Bermuda? The hurricane. Bahamas. Starts with a B. And you see those 20, 40, 30-foot waves just coming in on things. If you've ever seen a picture of a tsunami coming in just the power that it has.
It's called trypophobia.
Trypophobia. Trypophobics. I thought that was a phobic of eating trife. Tryophobia. There it is. Y'all thought I made that up, see? Right there it is. I love technology. Fear of small holes. Looks like a honeycomb would drive them crazy. See, y'all come here just to be entertained, don't you? Because you'll hear things in here you won't hear on television, I promise you that.
That says, welcome to your worst nightmare.
Right underneath it.
And not mine. I'm sure it bothers somebody. They just made up. For I am the Lord your God. So now he's calling. Here's who I am. I'm God. I make the waves. My name is the Lord Almighty. I put my words in your mouth and covered you with the shadow of my hand. Remember, that's what he did to Mr. Moses, so he could go past him up on Mount Sinai. I who set the heavens in place, who laid the foundation of the earth, and who said to Zion, you are my people. So whatever's bothering you, there's something bigger. Whatever group seems to be your foe, there's someone stronger. And all we've got to do is celebrate our relationship with God. Now, the next half chapter, which we do not have enough time today, but I want to get into it, not as much detail. The wrath, the cup of the Lord's wrath. I would start next week's sermon, if I remembered it, with a famous, you remember a famous movie about wrath? Well, I never thought about that. Well, y'all got too much class for me. Steinfeld's Grapes of Wrath. I was thinking the Wrath of Khan with Star Trek, with Ricardo Montalban in a Corinthian leather. But we'll talk about wrath next week. Thank you all. Oh, a question in the back?